Thanks for joining us for the executive series. Today I'm speaking with Kate Munnings, who is the CEO of Virtus Health. Kate, nice to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you too.
Now, you're only recently arrived in this new role. It's been 6 months, but that's still a relatively short period of time. Tell us a little bit about the journey that brought you to Virtus.
Oh, wow. Well, I've had quite a diverse career, starting in the, you know, a pandemic that we experienced in the 1980s when I was an HIV nurse, a registered nurse specialising in HIV and AIDS. I then became very interested in law and did a law degree and was a partner at Coles Chambers Westgarth and Baker McKenzie. And I never did any medical law. I did commercial contract law. Then I joined Transfield Services as their chief risk and legal officer, and then moved into operations and ran their large complex government contracts. 4 years ago, I joined Ramsay Healthcare as their chief operating officer, and that's when I sort of went back into healthcare, and from there I've joined Virtus Health in March this year.
What an extraordinary journey.
It's unique.
Indeed. So what are your impressions after 6 months in the big chair, I suppose, at
Virtus? Well, it's been a wild ride. You know, I started at the height of the pandemic, but I think the sector is a fascinating sector. It's a really important sector, and the people who work there and the people who work at Virtus are incredible. They're very committed clinicians and scientists. Everyone there feels that they're there for a purpose of helping people become parents, and that makes them extremely passionate about what they do. We're also at Virtus, because we've got our international footprint, we're in Denmark, Singapore, the UK and Ireland, and we're the largest in all those countries other than, I think, the UK. So we've got a large scale. And scale, I think, in healthcare is quite a point of difference. Yeah. And that scale gives us a unique data set, which is something that underpins our focus on research and innovation. And we're going to invest a lot more in that over the next few years.
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned the data set, because it provides you with an interesting perspective on the way that fertility was embraced across different geographic jurisdictions over the last 6 months. What have you taken out of that?
It is quite different in every state. So we run somewhat of a federated model here in Australia, and I think that's helped us be successful in our overseas growth, because while we have commercially strong businesses in all our overseas operations, I think because we learnt from the federated model here in Australia, and we recruit from the local market, experts in the local regulatory environment. But there is great diversity. And in Australia, where we're one country, I think that there's an opportunity there to harmonise some of the regulation across the sector. And we don't really want people going overseas to get access to care in potentially less safe environments than they could here. So we are a globally united world, although it might not feel like that right at this moment. We are, and people do go overseas for healthcare, so why not have it safely regulated here in Australia?
Now, one of the features of your short time at Virtus is that you've reset the strategic direction.
Yeah, we have.
What's been the main change?
Well, I think we're building on a lot of the good work that had already been done. And, you know, our focus, while we went through the COVID pandemic, we navigated a liquidity pathway with our banks, we managed our staff, stood them down and restarted really, really respectfully and carefully. So we maintained our staff and their commitment. And then we thought, we've got to look forward. We can't just admire the problem that is COVID. Yeah. And we had to look forward. So we set a strategy which really plays to our strengths. So we're looking at harmonising our the key processes across our labs and our clinics that underpin success, success rates, so early pregnancies. So that's, we're calling that one lab and one clinic, and we've got the benefit of some world-class embryologists who are supporting us in that strategy. We're looking at, again, harnessing what COVID brought to the sector, virtual care. Like a lot of what we can do is we can do virtually, and that both improves patient experience but also increases our reach to new patients in regional Australia and in and creating hubs in Denmark for Europe and in Singapore for Asia, so they can see patients in those regional areas. We're also looking in investing in our genetics capability. We've already got a leading capability in genetics, but we're going to invest further in that because our genetic testing capability allows us to provide IVF to patients who are looking to avoid passing disease conditions to their children. So that's a growth area for us. And then the third is what we're calling precision fertility. It's building on the IV technology, the AI capability that Virtus and Harrison AI had already developed, which was an ability to identify the embryo most likely to result in a baby using deep learning. And we're going to build on that and enhance and the insights to support decisions across the IVF pathway through the application of AI. So it really is a decision to support tool for our clinicians.
So one of the interesting decisions that you undertook was not to raise capital in the last 6 months. What was behind that thinking?
So I was the chief risk and legal officer at a ASX listed company at Transfield Services during the GFC. And I observed that when capital is raised at a deep discount, it is very hard to recover. And COVID created an artificial discount, particularly in that height of the crisis. And at times you might feel like, well, you've got to react early. But we
had to attract investors, you really had to be aggressive in that.
But we had confidence that we could negotiate a liquidity pathway with our banks. Debt was not expensive, and so we did that, and we became committed. We just made a judgment call about how long the suspension of elective surgery would be, how soon it would be that we could recover. We also invested in building video consultation capability for all our clinicians, so they were able to build a backlog. And we then, you know, like other organisations, we worked with government to give them the assurance that we could restart safely. So with all of that work, we knew we wouldn't necessarily be in a 6 month shutdown, which was the rhetoric at the time that organisations would be shut down for 6 months. We predicted we'd be back up and running. We worked towards that. We planned for that, and we were. And we're now, we recently went to the market with an update on our debt position, and we're at 2x, which was a good outcome.
And all of that, of course, was a pathway to being able to pay the deferred dividend
as well. We did, yes. We announced on the 25th of September that the interim deferred dividend would be paid in November as expected, because the trading conditions are better than, what was predicted when it was deferred.
And that must have been quite reassuring for your major stakeholders or shareholders.
Yeah, it's reassuring. It's reassuring for our major stakeholders. I think they're happy with our decision. We certainly had a lot of one-on-ones during the full year announcement period, and they were happy with the decision because they realised that a deeply discounted equity raise is never good for shareholders, and that's not what we wanted to do. So we delivered.
Well, it's been a pleasure speaking to you, Kate.
And likewise.
Look forward to more conversations in the future. Thanks for your time.
My pleasure.
And thanks for joining us for the Executive Series.